From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
The Cry of the Banshee. Let me state plainly that I lay no claim to being what is termed a scientific psychic researcher. I am not a member of any august society that conducts its investigations of the other world, or worlds, with test tube and weighing apparatus. Neither do I pretend to be a medium or consistent clairvoyant. I have never undertaken to raise ghosts at will for the sensation seeker or the tourist. I am merely a ghost hunter. One who lays stake by his own eyes and senses. One who honestly believes that he inherits in some degree the faculty of psychic perceptiveness from a long line of Celtic ancestry, and who is, and always has been, deeply and genuinely interested in all questions relative to phantasms and a continuance of individual life after physical dissolution. So much for advertisement. I do not believe that one must necessarily be a professed psychic in order to see a ghost. I have proved far too many exceptions to this assumption. Undoubtedly, some people do often see and hear ghostly phenomena, while others never see or hear. But I do not believe the experiencing of such phenomena is dependent on any power within us. I think it is quite a feasible supposition that ghosts can appear to any of us, both when and where they will. In short, that the power lies entirely with the other side. But the psychic faculty does help, and it does appear that many people gifted with this power tend to inherit it from their parents. My mother, who came from an old Leicestershire family, had many ghostly experiences when, as a girl, she lived with her parents in a badly haunted house some 10 miles from Northampton. Her bedroom in this house was separated from the rest of the bedrooms by a long and gloomy corridor. One night, she was awakened by feeling something heavy jump on the bed. Wondering what on earth it could be, she raised herself to look, and in the moonlight saw a huge black cat seated at the foot of the bed glaring at her. Very frightened, as she knew there was no such cat in the house, she struck a light only to find that the cat had vanished. Thinking it must be somewhere in hiding, though she had not heard it jump off the bed, she searched the room thoroughly, but it was nowhere to be found, and the doors and windows, it being winter and the weather intensely cold, were shut. Much mystified and still very frightened, for all was now hushed and silent and there was a strange eerie feeling in the atmosphere, she got back into bed, but she had not been there long before something sprang on her and she shrieked. Her parents came running to see what was the matter. They looked everywhere, but there was no sign of any cat, and they went back to the room declaring she must either have imagined it or have been dreaming. Nothing further happened that night, but subsequently, at frequent intervals, my mother saw a phantom cat, not only in her room at night, but sometimes in broad daylight in various parts of the house, and it was a great relief to her when some other members of the household finally saw it too. On another occasion, this time in the summer, she awoke one night to find the room aglow with a strange reddish light. On looking round to find the cause of the light, she saw that it came from a fire burning brightly in the grate, and that seated in front of the fire, with his back turned towards her, was a man in a blue tailcoat, peruke, and knee breeches, holding a baby in long clothes on his lap. As she watched this man, more fascinated than frightened, he suddenly bent down, stirred the fire into a fierce blaze with a poker, and then springing up threw the baby into the flames. My baby was so shocked that she fainted. When she recovered and opened her eyes, the room was in darkness, save for the moonlight. The grate was black and empty, and nothing whatever remained to remind her of the tragedy she had just witnessed. but the horror of it so unnerved her that she felt she could never sleep in that room again. Her parents, therefore, allowed her to occupy another room, although they did not encourage her in attributing her experience to the supernatural. After this, she had no more disturbed nights, but she experienced a ghostly happening in broad daylight that alarmed her more than any of her former experiences. She and a maid were left alone in the house one day when the rest of the family went to a fete in a neighboring town. The two were walking in the grounds of the house when my mother, discovering she had left something she wanted in her bedroom, ran indoors to fetch it. Having got it, she set off to rejoin the maid, and being anxious to do so quickly, she cut through the housekeeper's room and along a stone-paved passage leading to a side entrance that was seldom used, at least by the family. On crossing the housekeeper's room, she heard a noise behind her, and looking back, saw the handle of a cupboard door, an inset cupboard occupying almost the whole length of one wall, was turning round, as if motivated by someone inside the cupboard who was about to come out. The door being now unlatched, my mother, in a paroxysm of terror, turned and fled, hearing footsteps coming after her. Fortunately, the door at the end of the passage was open, and out she flew without once looking back. Nothing could have induced my mother and the maid to return to the house alone. Presently, however, some of the servants returned from the fete, and their company, my mother again passed through the housekeeper's room. Instinctively, her eyes sought the cupboard, and she particularly noticed that its door, which she had last seen open, was now tightly shut. According to a tradition in the village, a murder of a very heinous character had been committed in the house many years previously, and therefore, chiefly at my mother's instigation, boards were taken up and various excavations made, in the expectation of finding bones. But nothing was ever discovered except a long disused well in the garden, and among the rubbish with which it had been filled in an ancient blunderbuss. After my grandparents left the house, it was partly pulled down and reconstructed. This seemed to put an end to the hauntings, which, it transpired, had been experienced by several other people in earlier years. My mother was never really happy while she lived in the house, and it was a considerable relief to her when her family moved. However, she had another experience of an even more startling nature at an old country house in Worcestershire, which she was visiting. She was sitting alone in the drawing room one afternoon when something attracted her attention to the floor just in front of her, and she saw the carpet suddenly become violently agitated as if by a strong gust of wind blowing under it. She glanced up at the window, but the ivy clustering around it hung limp and motionless, and not a leaf stirred. Indeed, the day had been unusually mild for late autumn. Then she looked down again at the floor and was chilled to her bones. Coming up through the carpet was a head, a human head covered with a mass of long, black, matted hair, obviously a woman's. Up and up very slowly it came, until my mother saw a white face with two wide-open, dark, glassy eyes fixed on her. She tried to scream but could not, and as she sat silent and helpless, the figure kept on rising through the floor, until finally it stood fully revealed before her, the apparition of a woman in an old-fashioned white dress with a yellow shawl around her shoulders and an infant in her arms. With her eyes still fixed on my mother, she turned slightly round and then glided away in the direction of the antique fireplace, where she eventually vanished, apparently melting into the wall. The spell then broke, and my mother quickly pulled herself together and, springing to her feet, ran out of the room to look for her hostess. The latter expressed great concern. "I ought to have told you," she said apologetically, "that this house, and the drawing room in particular, is haunted, but the ghost as seldom takes it into their head to visit us that I did not think it necessary." She then added that, according to tradition, a gypsy woman and her baby were once enticed into the house and murdered, their bodies being buried afterwards on the premises. Naturally, this explanation proved a great shock to my mother, who announced her intention of going home the next day, a very wise decision on her part, since only an hour or so before she left, she encountered the same apparition once more in another part of the house. My object in recounting my mother's experience is simply to show that if the psychic faculty exists, She undoubtedly had it, and that being so, I probably inherited from her as well as from my father. My father came from County Limerick and belonged to the Trug Castle O'Donnells. The faculty of his family was never so vividly demonstrated as at his own tragic, violent death, which occurred when I was barely 6 months old. As I've already stated, my father's vocation was that of a clergyman of the Church of England, and it was while awaiting preferment from one living to another that he decided to go for a trip with a clergyman friend to Palestine. The two traveled together as far as Alexandria, but there they parted, my father suddenly deciding to go to Abyssinia with a member of a well-to-do family whom he had met on the voyage out. One evening, about 3 weeks later, my mother was sitting alone in the drawing room of our old home in Ireland. It was a wild night, the rain coming down in torrents and the wind howling round the house and down the chimney. There was no gas in the house, and my mother, finding the lamplight somewhat trying to the eyes, had given up all attempts to read. Gradually succumbing to the warmth from the fire, she relapsed into a gentle doze. She was awakened by a loud crash. Jumping up from her chair in fright, she found that one of the windows had been burst open by the storm and that a screen standing near it had been knocked over. She was about to replace it when from the hall outside there came a series of the most appalling screams. She ran to the door and opened it. All the servants were collected in a group listening. "What has happened? What is it?" my mother asked, gazing in astonishment at the pale faces in front of her. "Sure, Mum, it's the banshee," the cook replied. "I know her voice well. There's no mistaking her. Didn't I hear her a-wailing and a-groaning round the house the night the master died? And didn't my mother hear her doing of the same the night the colonel died? 72 years ago this very day. Listen, there she is again." As she spoke, there was a repetition of the sounds, only this time they seemed to come from another part of the house. My mother said afterwards it was difficult to describe the sounds, which seemed to be a strange blending of a woman's voice with something wholly unearthly. Beginning in a low key, the sounds gradually rose to a series of screams of awful intensity, and then, as gradually dying away, ended in a heart-rending wail. At first, my mother thought the voice was speaking, and she tried hard to catch the words, but was unable to do so. When she commented on this fact to the cook, the latter at once exclaimed, "'Tis no wonder, Mum, that you couldn't hear what the banshee said, seeing that you're not an O'Donnell. The O'Donnell banshee only makes herself understood to an O'Donnell, though it is the likes of us all at this blessed minute that can hear her. She's after letting us know that one of the Trog O'Donnells will be dying somewhere this very night." The sounds continued for some little time longer and then ceased. Simultaneously, the storm abated. My mother and some of the servants went out into the grounds, but nothing was to be seen save the long row of motionless trees facing the house and the long leaden line of the distant river that formed a boundary to the grounds. Nothing further happened that night, but the following night at about 12 o'clock, the whole household was aroused by a loud hammering that seemed to come from the cellars. Then, after a while, the hammering ceased and footsteps, which were recognized by all who were listening as my father's, ascended the stairs. They came right up, pausing for a few seconds outside each of the bedroom doors, until finally they arrived at the night nursery on the top landing. My nurse, who slept in the night nursery, then saw the door slowly open a few inches, and while a light that looked like the light from a candle appeared on the threshold, a voice which she recognized as that of my father spoke, but so quickly that she could not understand a word of what was said. She was, of course, far too frightened to utter a sound, let alone make herself known to the speaker. And as soon as the voice ceased, the light was withdrawn and the door closed. The steps then retraced their way downstairs, and nothing more was heard that night. The following night, however, at the same time, the same phenomena occurred, and they occurred repeatedly every night without intermission for a period of 6 weeks, when they abruptly ceased. After each fresh occurrence of the phenomena, those who experienced them and believed them to be due to the spirit of my father made up their minds afresh to try to overcome their fear sufficiently to speak the next time they occurred. But when the next time arrived, the same thing happened. Fear or something invariably prevented them from uttering a sound. And so in this case, as in most cases of bona fide haunting, there was no communication with the ghost. These nightly disturbances following on her experience of the Banshee naturally made my mother very apprehensive for my father's safety, but she heard no news of him, ill or otherwise, till about 4 weeks after the disturbances began. She then received a letter from the French consul at Massawa, stating that her husband, the Reverend Henry O'Donnell, had died at Arquico, a village on the Red Sea coast, under circumstances that strongly suggested foul play. In fact, as she later heard from various people in Massawa, there was no doubt whatever that he had met his death at the hands of a gang in that area who robbed and murdered any stranger with money who fell into their hands. It was established that my father had been killed at about noon on the day after the Banshee had been heard at our home by my mother and the servants. After an interval of 8 years, the Banshee again demonstrated its presence in the same house, but on this occasion it was a malevolent Banshee, and it was not only heard, it was seen. What happened was this. One winter afternoon, my youngest sister was going upstairs to the top landing when she was brought to a sudden halt by the appearance of a strangely unpleasant face looking down at her from over the balustrade. Long and narrow and crowned with a mass of matted, tow-colored hair, it emitted a yellowish-green light, and as my sister gazed up at it, petrified with horror, its pale, obliquely set eyes seemed to smile evilly. For some seconds, my sister was too spellbound to move, but at last, tearing herself away from the spot, she ran helter-skelter downstairs, and as she did so, the whole house echoed and re-echoed with loud peals of satanical laughter. As before, the servants assembled in the hall, terrified at the sounds, and it was our own nurse who proclaimed them to be due to the Banshee. The purpose of its advent was soon demonstrated, for a few days after my sister saw it, an O'Donnell aunt of ours died, and exactly a week after its manifestation, my mother died. So much for my family hauntings. In the following chapters, I now give some of the more interesting cases which I have investigated and which have come to me over a period of more than half a century spent ghost hunting.